The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in this Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
Okay. Good evening. This is Mike Friedenberg standing in for Bob Siegel and The Bob Siegel Show. We just want to thank you for joining us here this evening. And we have a very good show lined up for you. Bob Siegel would be with us. It would be here normally, but he's a bit under the weather, so he asked me to fill in for him. So I'm very happy to be able to do that. If you do want to join us in the show, you can call in to 888-344-1170. And this evening, we're very pleased to have the Bob Siegel Show's own resident film critic, Mark Boubian. Mark Boubian is actually a longtime friend of mine and also a longtime friend of Bob's. But he is very much into the movie scene. He's also into high-fidelity video reproduction. I can tell you yeah. that much as well. So I'm sure some of you would be envious of his system at home. But anyway, we're going to discuss some of the movies that that have been out fairly recently in the theaters, but now are also available on Blu-ray. Is that
That's
correct,
right.
Mark?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So we'll head into that there. And, you know, I know you have a number of movies here we want to talk about, so I'll turn it over to you right now.
All right. Well, thanks, Mike. It's great to be here, and I'm glad I can be with you. We'll mix things up a little bit. We'll see. You know, this time of year is really fun because we have both the summer movies coming out on Blu-ray that were really good or really bad, depends on how you view it, and so we get a chance to watch those movies again or see stuff we haven't seen. And then we've got another crop of really good movies coming out because the big money-making season besides summer is Thanksgiving and then followed by Christmas. So it's probably one of the best times because if you go stay at home, go out to the movies, you're going to find something good no matter what you do.
Okay.
So some movies that I wanted to recommend on Blu-ray first are some of the movies that we saw over the summer that were really enjoyable, some of the movies I really liked. I think I talked on an earlier show a lot about the movie Oblivion, which is a Tom Cruise movie directed by Joseph Kosinski, who did Tron. Absolutely one of the best movies I have seen in ages. It was definitely one of the top two movies of the summer, maybe even of the year. It was number one until I saw another movie a week ago that I'll tell you about in a little bit. The competition for Oblivion in the number one spot.
Wow.
Iron Man 3 is another movie that just came out. Obviously, I don't know if there's much to say about Iron Man 3 because it's Iron Man 3 and everybody likes Iron Man these days. So that's another one that's out on Blu-ray. Star Trek, the new Star Trek Part 2. Again, another movie that you'll be able to get a chance to watch if you missed it over the summer. A couple of movies we didn't get to talk about, though, that happened near the end of the summer, near the end of the run. These are the movies that are Hollywood doesn't necessarily have a lot of faith in, so they kind of toss them in August, sort of, because that's the trail end of the season. People are getting ready to go back to school, football starting, so these movies tend to fail sometimes, but they're not necessarily expected to make a lot of money. Elysium is one of these movies. It was directed by Neil Blomkamp, who did District 9. I think that came out about 2 or 3 years ago. District 9 was an absolutely amazing movie, groundbreaking in many ways, very interesting, very challenging film, not a really enjoyable in terms of feel good, but it was just a really well-done movie. I think I, for one, had a lot of expectations coming into Elysium, and unfortunately, I don't feel like it lived up to the standards of District 9, or maybe I should say it lived up a little too closely to those standards because it almost came across as a carbon copy of District 9. We've got our kind of reluctant hero who, due to circumstances way beyond his control and corruption all over the place, he is, in a sense, infected and going to die. And he lives out this, the movie is basically the last few hours or days of his life. District 9 was almost exactly that description. I mean, word for word, I could say that about District 9. So they're very similar films in terms of what happens to the characters. They're played out differently because they're in different settings. One movie's about an alien, another movie's about, oh, a ragtag kind of misfit guy who's trying to make his make up for the bad stuff he's done in his life and do right for himself, but not do right for others, actually. That's the interesting thing about his character. He's very selfish. Once again, a reflection of District 9. I think that idea of a very selfish character who has to come to terms with who he is and then what he can do for other people, or what sacrifices he might be willing to make, when initially the answer is absolutely no sacrifices whatsoever, to possibly sacrificing his life for others, that transition is a very interesting idea. I'm going to say unfortunately about this film way too many times, just because I did really have a lot of expectations with it after District 9. But the Matt Damon, who plays the main character, he's a good actor. He does a good job. This is the perfect role for him, but it just is not that great of a script in the end. It's interesting. It's a well done, well photographed, very visually a very good movie, but just, if you've seen District 9, you're going to see it all over again in this film. So,
but not as well done.
Not quite as well done. I mean, maybe if this movie came out first, I'd be saying the same thing about District 9. It's just such a parallel in terms of character development. It's really hard to kind of get away from that. I think another issue, District 9 and this movie both have very obvious political and ethical themes, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, District 9 plays out this a very strong theme about racism, but it's done in a way that we haven't really seen before, and it takes place in South Africa, where they're dealing with a much more sort of modern, I'm not quite sure how to put it. The racism in South Africa, I think, is much worse, or has been much worse, than it was in America at the same time. So during the 90s, apartheid was falling, I should say, and there was and is still tons of violence that goes on there in terms of the racial tension, and then there's AIDS and everything. So South Africa is a very, very dangerous place in terms of racism, much worse than
it's volatile.
America. Volatile, that's a great word.
And,
thank you.
And this was xenophobism, right?
Right.
To some degree?
Yes. District 9 was xenophobism, exactly, because they have these real aliens, not just a different race. I mean, a different race, a really different race, not just whether their skin is a different color.
So, Mark, let me ask you a question there. I mean, when you do these reviews, because it's the first time I'm doing this with you on the radio here.
Sure.
Do you avoid stating any kind of spoilers as much as you can?
I generally do. It just depends on the film. District 9 is an old enough movie that I wouldn't...
You're not feeling restricted on that?
Not really, but... So go ahead, if you want to say something
about that. Well, no, I happen to have read a thorough review of it,
okay.
So I sort of know, but not having seen it, so my sense of artistic thing there, but I happen to know that I believe it has to do with a person being able to, it's eventually, to walk a mile in the other person's shoes.
Right.
Would that be a characterizing?
Yeah, that would
9?
Be a very good way to put it. And again, that movie is really effective because it forces you as a person to go into the other's shoes when you start out. And you see how disgusting the aliens are at the beginning, and there's a lot of reasons to not like them. They're very off-putting in the way they're drawn and graphically presented to you. So as a human being, you have kind of this visceral negative response to them.
They're pretty threatening.
Yeah. And, well, they look threatening, but they're not. And so it's kind of an interesting dichotomy.
They look threatening, right.
Yeah.
They certainly look threatening. I mean, I've seen them, yeah.
But right, so the main character is slowly changing into an alien because he was infected with some kind
of... Like a retrovirus.
Chemical. Yeah, exactly. So you kind of make that transition with him, and it's a very well played out movie.
Okay. Well, that's one I had thought about. Right. Seeing now, I just haven't seen it yet, so now maybe on this day we'll go see it. Okay.
See, right. I'm going to end up coming across recommending actually District 9 as a movie people should see instead of Elysium, and actually that would be a good recommendation, because if you want to buy the Blu-ray or the DVD, you're going to get it much cheaper because it's an older movie. You can get it for like probably $10 on Amazon or something right now, where Elysium is going to be probably $20, twice as much, and not twice as good of a movie by any means. I mean, it's totally worth seeing, though. Elysium is totally worth seeing. It's a fun movie to watch. It's a little bit on the dark side, and the theme, it's about the healthcare debate that we're going through right now in America. Who deserves healthcare and who doesn't? It's a little bit more cut and dried in the movie. There's even, like, I figured out in the first 10 minutes that it was going to be about healthcare. I was disappointed by that because he's really banging you over the head with the theme. And after the movie, the friend I saw it with, I made a joke. Did you know what the movie was actually talking about? He said, yeah, there was a sign at the beginning of the movie that said the words healthcare. And I didn't even see that. But that's how bad the movie is really trying to drive this point home. And it's just too in your face.
I
really is detrimental.
I have to admit, I did see the previews for it. And I was off-putted by that, or turned off to the degree I thought, oh, great.
Yeah.
I'm going to have somebody preaching at me with this movie. And that was one that made me hesitate on it.
And if
haves and have-nots, it was part of the theme as well,
rich
right?
Rich people, good. Let's see. Poor
bad.
People, good. Rich people, evil.
Yeah, okay.
Like the Titanic thing all over again. Yeah, and that's how it comes across. And you know what? I'm happy to see a movie that I agree with or disagree with, as long as the theme is challenging or not just crashing on me. Like, I actually agreed with 90% of what this guy was trying to say, but Greddy was hitting me on the head with it so hard. I had a headache at the end, and I'm going to go the opposite way now, dude. You've convinced me to go the other way because I'm so angry about how you made me feel in this movie. I mean, that's the kind of reaction I have. I just really don't like it when they overdo things.
When they hit you over the head with it.
Yeah. And, you know, and the funny thing is I didn't expect to be hit over the head, but if I look at District 9, it's a total... He's banging you on the head with racism that whole movie, too. But it worked for some reason because of the beauty of the way he did the movie, where there you have that mile in your shoes transition taking place and you're carried along and it's slow. The progression is slow enough that you buy into
more
it.
More subtle, more skillful, maybe.
Exactly. This movie, there's a transition, but it's not until the very end. And it's so abrupt, it just doesn't ring true at all. I mean, I knew what was going to happen, but I didn't buy it. It's still worth seeing because it's a really good science fiction movie. But, you know, in terms of theme, it's just not going to be subtle it's entertaining, but it's just not one of my most recommended movies of the summer. And again, this is my biggest disappointment of the summer. That is actually saying a lot because this was a pretty decent movie in any other year.
So on a 10-point scale, where do you put it?
Gosh, I don't ever give a point rating. Let's see. I'd give it a 5 just because it's thematically such a bummer. But if I were to ignore that, I'd probably push it up to an 8 because it's...
Oh, that's a pretty good rating then.
Yeah. All right. The story's okay.
Well, I hate to tell you that you were wrong. It's a lot more expensive. It's $11.98 to get District 9 on Blu-ray on Amazon.com.
What a ripoff. Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
Yeah. You just wait for the right time. Amazon's actually pretty awesome. I've gotten a lot of movies for $6 and $7.
No, you're absolutely. Yeah. And if you have the Prime, then you don't pay shipping.
That's right.
Don't forget that.
Which I do. And they're not paying us for this advertisement,
by the way. I hate to say
it,
but yes, they should. But okay.
Right. We'll ask for a kickback later on.
Yes. I'm waiting for that. With bated breath. Okay.
Me too. Okay. Well,
all right.
I'm not going to stop eating, hoping for that check to come in. Okay. So another movie I didn't really talk about very much. I'll go the opposite way on this one. This The Wolverine. Now, it's already a problem when they have to call it The Wolverine. I think Bob would have a heyday with that title. They needed to put the in there just for some reason. He's the Wolverine, I guess, but they could have just called it Wolverine.
Isn't there another movie called Wolverine?
Maybe there.
I think there might be a movie called Wolverine.
Was the first one called Wolverine? Yeah,
okay.
Right. Okay,
okay,
there you go.
Right.
So then to their credit, I bet they were trying to divorce themselves from that awful film as much as they could. Now, I actually See, we were talking about willful suspension of disbelief before the show started, and I'm actually one of the most willful people of all, as long as I kind of like what's going on.
Right.
Like, I love Wolverine. He's a great character. So, and I love the X-Men. That was really the first comic book movies that bought me into the comic book realm. Yeah.
Okay.
And, so I owe a lot to Wolverine, I guess I should say, and I really like his character. So I enjoyed X-Men Origins. But that's not to say it's a good movie by any means. It means I enjoyed it. It was entertaining and fun for me, but I would not recommend it in terms of quality. This movie, The Wolverine, absolutely a great movie. I had people refuse to see it with me because of the first movie. Absolutely refuse. My daughter wanted to see it, and I'm so happy she did because I got to see the movie with her, and it was awesome. And they abandoned a lot of the tropes that you see in the typical action comic book science fiction movies that we're seeing today. I mean, it was not an Avengers. It was not a Thor. It was not an Iron Man. It was a character-based film.
Okay.
Sure, there's some fighting. Of course. There's going to be, you know, he's a superhero. You're going to have to fight someone, dude. But most of the movie was really about developing Wolverine's character further.
A character study.
Yeah. And he is a great character. Now, when we first see him at the beginning of X-Men 1, he's this thick-skinned loner, stone-hearted, won't let anybody in.
Right.
And as the X-Men series progresses, he becomes a little teeny tiny bit vulnerable because he falls in love with one of the X-women, I guess you would say, but with Jean. And she, unfortunately, loses her life in one of the movies, in the second movie.
Yep.
And unfortunately, even more, they bring her back in the third movie, which is a travesty.
I didn't see that one.
Okay, so now the third movie is such a travesty that at the end, and this is a spoiler, but this movie really stinks.
Deserves to be spoiled, huh?
Yeah,
it deserves to be spoiled.
It's so bad it's not a spoiler.
Okay, all right.
You'll see it coming. But Wolverine, I guess they were trying to build the tension. Wolverine has to kill the woman he loves. She's been brought back and she is turned evil. Now, this is actually accurate to the comic book, so they get a little credit for that, even though they ruin her character in the film, in the third X-Men film. But at the end of she's this great weapon that's pulled out by Magneto, and then he loses control of her because she's just so insanely powerful. So it's up to Logan to approach her and kill her because
she has he has her trust to some degree.
To some extent,
I think
I
saw the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
And now this is the woman he's been in love with, probably the only woman he's ever loved, if we ignore the first X-Men movie, X-Men Origins. If we ignore that movie, this is the first woman he ever loved, and he really did give his heart to her, even though you don't see it that heavily, because he is this stone-hearted loner. And he kills her, okay? So the consequences of that would be pretty heavy, I would think, but not in the X-Men 3. I don't even know what he does afterwards. Has a beer and walks away or something, I don't know. But to the Wolverine's credit, the movie The Wolverine, this is a movie about the consequences of that single action. So what they've done is they've taken the worst X-Men movie, took the one consequence from that film that really is a major consequence, and said, what is Logan Wolverine going to do with that? And then we have the Wolverine, and that's what he is dealing with, Jean's death and his having killed her after not wanting to connect with people for so many years. So it's a really good movie because there's so much there in terms of character, in terms of trust and love, and how do you deal with someone's death, and, you know, the guilt,
grief
that Logan's feel. Yeah, grief even. I mean, it's an amazingly well done film. And the other interesting thing about the movie that I really liked is it was all filmed in Japan, and there are basically, after the introduction, which takes place in America, there are two American characters in the whole film, and one of them's Australian, actually. Logan, Hugh Jackman, he's Australian. Yeah. So, yeah, there's two white people, I guess I should say.
Two Caucasians.
But I didn't even notice till after the movie. I mean, I don't even care that there's I'm only pointing this out because Hollywood doesn't usually do this, especially with a blockbuster type of superhero movie. They are very, they stick to what they know. And big actors make big money. Hugh Jackman, he's a big actor. He's going to make big money, but they want to throw other big actors into most blockbuster films. They didn't do that with Wolverine. And not only did they not do that, they went exactly to the opposite, because going to Japan and filming there, you're not going to really know any of the actors, even if they're the most famous Japanese actors alive. We wouldn't know them because we don't see them here in America.
So, Mark, based upon this, actually, this is one I actually now, based upon your review, I will now go to the effort to watch, because of your description of being character-based.
Yeah.
Because I have to be honest, the X-Men in general was just a bit too much for me in terms of
even
the special powers.
Even the first two?
Yeah, I was not a huge X-Men fan.
Mm-hmm.
I actually did kind of like the Wolverine character, though,
yeah,
out of that. But there's, I have to tell you, I'm getting burned out on all the superhero characters now that are out there, like heroes and the 4400, these special powers, people who are moving past their, you know, Homo sapien origins.
Yeah,
all it's overwhelm. So it's hard for people, even though I do like Patrick Stewart and people of that. I mean, they're
right,
you know,
for and the next X-Men movie will be out, I think, next year or two years from now. I'm not quite sure what the schedule is for that one, but yeah, I see what you're saying, because there were some TV shows like Heroes that kind of seem like a copy of the X-Men, and even what they were trying to do, where they're learning about their powers. That's what the X-Men is about. There's a school, and they're learning about using their powers on one side, and then there's the X-Men who are developed, who are learning about relationships on another side. And then now the Days of Future Past is an X movie, and the previous X-Men movie with and fortunately Bryan Singer was involved in that one. That's why those two movies, I think, are actually good. But I can see you getting kind of overkilled on the whole
thing. I don't think they were bad at all. I mean, from what you're describing here, I'm probably not quite as jazzed about them as you are.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to say they were bad.
Right.
I think it's very hard to write for that genre. When you have people with extraordinary powers, you know, putting them in situations that really challenge them, you have to start doing things and jumping through hoops to do that to some degree.
Right. I agree. And fortunately, they did a good job. I think they did a good job. A very good job in the first couple of X-Men, because they were focused on developing the characters in the situations. They lose that in X-Men 3, and they've regained it with the Wolverine.
So we're going to be taking a little break here, but when we come back, what will we be talking about here? What's our next movie on the list here, Mark?
We can talk about... Let's roll with the X-Men thing and talk about another superhero movie, The Man of Steel.
Okay, well, we'll move next segment here. We'll be talking about The Man of Steel. I guess the third or fourth or fifth iteration, depending how you want to count it.
Right.
Okay.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480539, W&S Electric.
Do your kids ask you questions about God and the Bible that you can't answer? Sign yourself or your child up for a class with lots of solid answers at educateforlife.org before someone else gives them the wrong answers. Are you tired of not knowing what to say when your friends and family ask you questions about God and the Bible? Get equipped by signing up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone asks you, "How do you know the Bible's true?" do you say something like, "I just know it is"? If you're tired of giving lame answers, sign up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone says that God isn't real, wouldn't it be fun to prove that He is? Quickly, like a verbal ninja? by using science and logic. Sign up for a class at educateforlife.org with Christian apologetics teacher Kevin Conover, and you'll learn how to do that. educateforlife.org. If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. We now return to The Bob Siegel Show.
Hey, welcome back to The Bob Siegel Show. And this is Mike Friedenberg sitting in for Bob Siegel, who is a little bit under weather this evening. So once again, our thoughts go out to Bob and just hope he feels better. And I have in the studio with me Mark Boubian, who is the Bob Siegel Show resident film critic. And before we left, Mark promised we were going to be able to talk about the latest version of The Man of Steel, and i.e. The Man of Steel. So, Mark.
Right. Okay. Well, now, as a little intro here, I am not a Superman fan. As much as I never was a Batman fan, I think if I had to pick one I disliked more than the other, I couldn't have picked. I disliked them both. I could not stand the original Superman movies. If I ever was tempted to sleep through a movie, it would have been that one, because those two, I should say, the first two Superman movies.
Let me just interject here, Mark. I just so that our audience, viewing audience, knows this. Bob Siegel himself is a huge fan
yes,
of Superman 1 and Superman 2 with Christopher Reeves. And he will tell you that they both were actually made at the same time. So it's really
one movie.
It's really one movie, one story. I personally think they were actually quite good. But that's there. But now we're here to talk about Man of Steel.
Death, right. Okay. Yeah. See, I was bored to death.
But being that we live in this country and we do have the right to have differing opinions, Mark is, of course, entitled to his.
Thanks, Mike.
I'm so magnanimous.
Yes.
I'm magnanimous there. Okay.
I'm sure Bob would be equally magnanimous if he was here, fortunately for me. So, okay. So saying that, now they've had two film iterations. This is the third film.
I would call
iteration.
This, my opinion would be this is the
so
third.
There's been two to follow up, I meant to say. But the previous film iteration had all of this hype going into it. They're redoing it. They got a guy that looked like Christopher Reeve. They were paying homage to him and all this. And it was a terrible movie. I mean, it wasn't terrible. Like, I wasn't sleeping through it, but it was just a little bit better than that for me. It was really not a very good movie. And they wanted to do stuff different, and they tried, but it just did, for me, it did not work. And boy, I think somebody said to me once that Kevin Spacey is one of the most subtly threatening character actors there is out there. And he couldn't make Lex Luthor threatening to save his life in this movie. That's how bad the previous Superman movie was. I agree with all of that. It was not that great movie.
I'm on board with you, and I can't say I walked out of the theater, but I was disappointed.
Yeah.
And that's actually because I did like the first couple films.
Right, and I can see that. Now, as somebody who wasn't a fan of the first two, I was a little more forgiving of that previous one because they modernized it to some extent, and they jazzed it up and made it a little more action-y, but it just wasn't a great movie, and it was, you know, it just crashed and burned in the end, really. Now, this is a completely different thing. I think this movie had almost everything I could say I like in a movie. This movie had it, and I cannot believe it. I mean, I was interested in this film by what I saw in a few of the previews and knowing that Zack Snyder, who did 300 and Watchmen in particular, that he could do a good job with The Man of Steel, do something maybe a little different and do a good job. And then David S. Goyer, who wrote The Dark Knight, which the Batman movies, which I loved, even though I could not stand the character before the modern version, I thought, okay, these two guys together might be able to do something. And sure enough, they did. This was an absolutely amazing film. And at the beginning of the summer, one of the things I pointed out was that I love science fiction. That's always been my favorite genre. And I'm so glad to see so many science fiction movies coming out. And comic book movies were sort of filling that in too, because a lot of comic book movies have that sort of science fiction-y edge to them. Even Thor, which was supposed to be this almost pure fantasy about this alien race, really has that science fiction-y edge. They go to some extent to explain why they're called quote-unquote gods, but they're really an alien race and how they get here anyway. So
Asgardians.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, even though they're this mythical thing, they are really the science fiction thing. And I like that about Thor. The Man of Steel, what Zack Snyder did is he basically said, this is not a comic book movie. This is a science fiction movie. Superman is an alien. And he is. Of course he is. We all know that. But he's never called an alien until this film. So the approach was that you see Krypton, this planet, at the beginning of the film. You know Krypton is doomed, and they're talking about it being doomed right off the bat, of course. But there's so much action that occurs there. They spend a lot of time in the film on Krypton, and it's like watching a movie that's paying homage to Star Wars, maybe even a little Star Trek, but a lot of the great science fiction blockbusters that have that really fantastic space and effects going on. It's just a really, really satisfying film in terms of how well the special effects work and how science fiction-y it really feels from the beginning. And he's able to maintain that throughout. I thought, okay, this is awesome for the beginning, but once Superman gets to Earth, I'm going to hate the movie because it's just going to become the Superman movie once again. But it didn't do that because there was enough interesting different things. And one of the things I never really liked about Superman was I don't think anybody really wanted to ever explore his character deeply in film. It's just he's Superman, and let's make a movie about this guy who's super, and we all know he's super, so he's going to be super. And then when he runs into Kryptonite, he's not anymore. And how is he going to get that back? To me, I never really felt like there was much there below the surface in terms of the character of Superman. Here, we're seeing his struggle as he grows up and his choices, the choices he has to make to become the person that he's going to be. We know the person he's going to be already because we know Superman, but we've never really explored in film this dichotomy he has about being a human but being superhuman at the same time and the struggle that must be. And there's a couple of awesome, awesome scenes in the film with his father, played by Kevin Costner. Superman's, I think his name's Henry Cavill. I think that's
Henry Cavill. Cavill or Cable.
I don't know how to say it right. But, yeah. So apologies if I've wrecked it. But anyway, he and Kevin Costner have really good chemistry. And actually, I don't know if it's another actor that's playing the young Superman. I'd have to look it up. But anyway, there's a really good scene early on when Superman is being bullied because he's kind of, you know, the Clark Kent is that mild-mannered, wimpy guy persona. And he has that, you see a little of that in his character as a child, so he's getting bullied because he's the wimpy kid.
Is that the scene in the bar?
No, it's a different scene. The bar scene's a
little
when
later.
He's older.
Okay.
But I think it's actually earlier in the film, but it's
older. A flashback, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So this scene is him, and he's being bullied, and his dad's actually right there. And you can see in the actor's eyes that he wants to fight back. And it's awesome because as a viewer, you know what he's capable of. If he fights back, that's it for those kids. I mean, really, if he fights back, he'll destroy them.
Yes.
It would just be shocking. So this scene plays out really well because he chooses not to fight back. Then he admits to wanting to because he would. Now, that's the struggle that he's got. He's got to be able to withhold all the power within him in terms of dealing with people because at first he's hiding from humanity, but also he can harm people. If he uses his power, he can destroy people. He can destroy humanity if he so chooses.
I mean, with an infinitesimal amount of his power.
Yeah, it's amazing.
There's no chance to stand up to him.
Right. So that's that character struggle, that choices that he makes, and how it affects him later on in life, as we see in the film, is a really powerful statement, not just to me as a adult, but even to kids who are going to see this movie. Maybe they'll catch a little bit of that. The choices I make now are going to help build my character later. Later on in the film, we see him as the fully, developed Superman a little bit. He still struggles with that power that he's got, and he's faced with this choice. He's either got to kill the bad guy or not. And in the
this is a more recent film.
Yeah.
So my question here about that is that particular aspect of it is
a little bit of a spoiler.
But let me just say something here. It is very interesting that in most versions of Superman, he has an absolute rule that he does not kill. And that was the same for Smallville.
Okay.
That was also the same for the first couple movies there, and this guy as well. In this movie there, and it's a very interesting thing that they have that rule, and I actually have thought about that, because when you have that much power, you cannot be the judge, jury, and executioner.
Right.
You
there's
just
too
can't.
Much temptation you, there.
You,
yeah.
And you and you'd have to have an absolute rule on that, I think.
Right.
I think that it makes sense. Otherwise you'd be in danger of slipping.
Yeah.
But it can be frustrating as a viewer watching it, thinking, because obviously somebody's just really evil, and if he doesn't take care of him, that person that's evil goes on to do more bad things.
Right. Now, I think you're keying in on something that's really interesting, because you've seen the other movies, you know the character of Superman. That's something I'm not engaged in. So what I saw in this film is not actually a rule, but a choice made by Superman, where he, as he develops, he's got to choose not to harm people. And it's a struggle for him.
I think that's a very good point, though.
And even
the struggle part.
Even as you watch him later in life, it's still a struggle for him, whether or not what he has to do to protect humanity or whatever. So it's very well done, because unlike Elysium, this movie is much more subtle about how things are communicated. They're communicated through character, through action, through attitude, but not ever a sign that says, this is about Superman coming to grips with his, humanity or whatever. So that, to the movie's credit.
It's a more serious treatment
of
the subject
serious.
Matter than the first movies with Christopher Reeves.
Right.
Christopher Reeves, there was a lot of fun. I mean, and you had a goofy villain in it and things of that nature.
It felt like a comic book movie.
It was much more that way. But even though, once again, a lot of comic book movies, the comics they're based upon aren't really that cheerful.
Right.
There's something lost in the translation. So that is interesting. It is a more serious character development in that sense of that struggle part there.
Right. It's way to the movie's benefit, I think. I mean, for me especially, who didn't like Superman before. And I think one of the reasons I was interested in the film again is because of the two people whose names I knew were involved, Zack Snyder and David Goyer, working on the film, developing it, and they're going to come from the Dark Knight. Well, one of them's coming from the Dark Knight. One's coming from an even darker comic book genre. Genre's not quite the right word, but story. The Watchmen, which is about as dark as it ever will get.
Right.
Comic book movies. It's black as black can be. But, bringing that sort of thing into the lightest of light, which is Superman, I think they did a really good job of blending the two. It's not too dark. You're not at Dark Knight level or you're not even going to touch the Watchmen here. But it's not just all, dancing fairies or whatever, which is how I viewed the original Superman. One of the scenes I loved in the film, and of course this is what I'm going to key on, because as a Christian moviegoer, I'm always interested in seeing how Christianity plays out in film. And Superman, as he's struggling with his choice, there's a point where he's called to give himself up to the evil aliens. Now, this movie, I think one thing we didn't say about this movie is it actually parallels the first two Superman movies. It's a remake of those first two Superman movies, in a sense, as one story, where it's the villains from Krypton who were put on trial. They've escaped.
General Zod.
Right, and he's come to take Superman back.
Very similar plot line in that respect. Yes.
Right, exactly.
Which probably comes from the comic books, I'm guessing.
I would guess so too. I'm not never a reader of Superman, but so he's got to choose whether or not to give himself up, and he knows he can't trust General Zod, or he thinks he can't trust General Zod. He's never met the man. He's just learned who he is. So this is a struggle for him. Where does he go to make the decision but a church? Which I thought was interesting in and of itself. But as the scene is filmed, as it plays out, Superman is sitting in a pew talking to a priest who doesn't throw God at you or anything. He just asks a few moral questions.
He seems like a real person, actually, doesn't he?
Right.
Not a caricature of a Christian.
Right, or of a Catholic priest
in
particular.
Yes.
But behind Superman is a stained glass window with an image of Jesus in the stained glass. And clearly, you can see, I mean, it's not blurred, it's not obscured. It's stained glass, obviously. But there's two images superimposed. Superman in the foreground, Jesus in the background.
Do you think that was the director did it on purpose?
Absolutely. That stuff doesn't happen by accident. Right?
I am joking, of course.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
Boy, that was real subtle, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I don't think a lot of people notice that kind of thing, though, at times, because it's just a scene. He's just sitting in a church. There's stained glass behind him. That's normal. But, you know, looking around, if you open your eyes a little bit, you see stuff like that. So it's a wonderful image because it throws a lot of questions into the mix. What is Superman like Jesus? What is he going to do? I mean, he's looked upon to save humanity. So there's always been that parallel with Superman and Christ. But is Superman capable of doing that? And another question from another completely different angle is, look at the struggle that Superman's going through at this time in the story of his life. What about Jesus, who we don't see at all in the Bible at that time of his life? There's, 20 years, 25, almost 30 years of his life that we really don't see anything of. He's a baby, then he's a youth, and then he's a 30-year-old guy doing his ministry. So there's big gaps, and we don't see his development. So this was a really good way to kind of make a parallel and ask those questions. What would it have been like for Jesus to grow to know who he is as he got older?
Well, he could have called legions of angels in any time he wanted, but he didn't.
Right.
Jesus
didn't
do that.
Once again, that power and the character that Jesus had to build within himself, just like Superman, where if Jesus was bullied, we don't think of that, but isn't that something that's absolutely in the realm of possibility? How would he have reacted? And what does he do? I mean, what did Superman do? He held back. He wanted to fight, but he didn't. If Christ was in that same position, what would he do? And I think that's a very amazing question to be asking in a film like this, which is just one of those summer popcorn.
It is a very interesting question, because would somebody who had that almost absolute power, like if you were to give that absolute power to just your average person on the street,
how would they handle it?
I have to say, I think I'm one of those people that believes the power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Right.
Doesn't quite have absolute power because of the kryptonite thing.
Yeah.
But really, man, that it would be a pretty amazing person to make all the decisions and struggle as Superman does, and you know, Clark Kent does struggle with it.
Yeah, and another really interesting parallel you only see it a little bit in the movie because Kevin Costner, unfortunately, is in just a little bit of the film, I think just for length, and it's not because of they didn't want to develop a story. I think it was just that long of a movie. But who does Superman look to when he's struggling with his decisions?
His
earthly father, right. He looks to his father.
Yep.
And so that's another kind of parallel. Jesus must have been relying on either Joseph, his earthly father, or God, more likely, because Joseph disappears from the picture at some point
as
well.
Yeah, I think Joseph gets short thrift to some degree in the Bible.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be a whole different subject to talk about in depth.
Right.
I mean, Joseph.
Right, exactly. But these are great questions. Again, this is something that you don't typically think of seeing in a film like Superman or Man of Steel or, you know, anything that we talk about on the show, that you just aren't anticipating this depth of theme in films. And this is what this is what I love about movies. These kind of things are in there if we're just willing to open our eyes, take a look. Even the evil liberal Hollywood that we stereotype. They're throwing these movies out, and there's great images of Christianity.
I will say this. You can't avoid, it's almost impossible in our Western civilization to avoid Christian imagery. Because it's the best way to concisely convey something so often, and sometimes the most powerful way, often the most powerful way. And even people that don't even know they're doing it are doing it anyway, because they're so immersed in it, they don't realize that that's the basis and the foundation of it. And if you point it out to them, sometimes they'll be, oh yeah, I never really thought of it. I mean, and they're like, and you're like, how can you not notice this?
Right, because people look for different things in film. That's absolutely true. But you're right. Sometimes what's obvious to me may not be obvious to someone else, but that doesn't change that sometimes it is pretty darn obvious.
And let me interject something here. I will just do a little compare and contrast here. I agree with you that struggle, which you would think has to happen before you get to a decision that I just cannot be killing people.
Right.
That struggle is well done. And you're right. The movie follows the form of a classic science fiction movie, which tries to present more of a rationale behind it than, let's say, the first couple movies with Christopher Reeve, which was definitely more comic booky.
Right.
But I will say a couple of things. I thought Marlon Brando did a great job for his brief time he was in the first two movies.
As Godfather?
As Jarrell. As Jarrell. And Russell Crowe, whom I like, didn't blow me away in this film necessarily as far as being Jarrell. And then I thought Lois Lane in this film was, I hope they developed that, because right now I think Lois Lane was a little bit weak in this film. And also the central role that the Daily Planet plays, maybe just because it's early on, but that was a little weak as well.
Now, he's not there yet.
He's not there yet. So that to me, that's, but I will.
See, now I'm actually interested in hearing what you have to say about Lois Lane more, because that was something that I actually keyed in on, but in the opposite way.
Okay.
So let me throw out what I've got to say, and then I'll let you respond. Okay. Let's do it. Reversal here. So the producer actually in the special features, I just watched practically only this one thing. She said, Lois Lane has always been a very strong female character, and in this movie, we wanted to present her as such as well. Now, I thought she was completely wrong. I've never seen Lois Lane as a strong anything at all, except screamer. She screams like crazy for Superman all the time. That's it. That's all she does. She crashes her car into a ditch, lets the dirt fall on her before she can climb out. What the heck's going on with that? Then doesn't she end up on the dam somewhere? I don't know. And then Superman has to go back in time to save her. I mean, come on, lady. Get a clue here. She's one of the weakest female characters I think I've ever seen in a film. And much to the producer's credit, they did make a strong female character in this film. She's not a major character. I mean, she's the major female character, but the parents are really the heart and soul of this movie. So she doesn't play that particular role. And she does have a lot of room for development, but I felt like she came across as strong. She didn't rely on Superman as much for help as past Lois Lane's, and she was involved with Superman. She was active, very proactive in this film. Okay.
So with that said, the context is, first of all, I actually do like Superman in general. I mean, I grew up watching the Superman cartoons and I liked them in general. I thought Smallville, at least the first number of like three or four seasons, was really some of the best TV because of the character development aspects.
Right.
Really good character development. And obviously in that show, when you get to Lois Lane or Lois Lane or Lana Lang, I guess, was the other female character.
Smallville or in
Smallville, but also in the comic book series, they have those two characters. Those female characters are strong. Lois and Clark, which I actually did like as well, a different take.
Right.
The female character was a very strong professional character. But let's go back to the first two movies.
Yeah.
She actually was a hard-charging professional woman who would step on everybody to get to the story. I mean, that's one part you cannot forget about those two movies.
Yeah.
She really was. Now, and that's interesting, when I thought about the two characters, there was some silliness, but the scene where she's stuck in the car where the windows are already blocked and she's pounding to get out of them and she's actually slowly suffocating, to me, that connected with me far more than anything that the new movie had with Lois Lane in terms of emotional impact and feeling connected. I thought there was a lot more poignancy, a lot more drama there with that scene there that I saw in any of the Superman, the new Superman movie, which I, by the way, the new Man of Steel movie, which I did like for many of the same reasons you're saying there.
Right.
And it's got potential. It definitely has potential to develop some of that stuff. I still think it's still needs to be developed, but I would be willing to give it a chance to do it, saying that it's just not there yet.
It's earned its chance, for sure, yeah. And I can see what you're saying about that Lois Lane. I think for me, it was just a little too much because I saw the windows is open. Why don't you get out of the car, Lois? And then the dirt starts pouring in through the windows.
She couldn't get, if you look at it, she couldn't really get out. I've seen it multiple times. Right. Probably.
Okay. See, I think that's the key. You saw it multiple times. I saw it once and never wanted to see it again. So I didn't. I wasn't willing to even consider that.
So, but with that said, I do actually what you said, that the more of the of a pure sci-fi treatment of the movie versus the comic book treatment, which is I'm a huge that is my genre as well, sci-fi. Like, And so I do appreciate that aspect, and that is a, that's a very good way to characterize it, I think.
Right. Yeah.
A comic book treatment
versus a science fiction treatment,
and some really some very. I mean, Gene Hackman does a great job as a villain, but he is, but there's a lot of humor and, and things like that.
It's very comical.
There's the comical aspects of it. So, yes, but this is a more straight shot, I guess, on it.
Right, yeah. And it is a little heavier. It's on the heavier side. So, again, I like that. I think that's a modern view. We're kind of jaded since 9/11, I think, a little bit. So that heavier stuff now is coming out in our art. And I think Superman is one of those films that's, I don't know if I would say benefited is quite the right word, but it's reflecting that as well. So
it's more sober.
Yeah. And it makes sense to me because I felt like The Dark Knight was the first movie to really address artistically a lot of the subtext of 9/11 that we had in our culture. And to their credit, they did a wonderful job at that. And that's one of the reasons I like that movie. So it follows that the same author would be able to do something similar with Superman, I think. So let's talk about a movie that's out in the theater before it's before we have to go. To kind of take a left turn, we're still in the science fiction realm here, but there's actually several good movies out. I mean, not a left turn would be Thor, of course. That movie is the big blockbuster, I guess.
I just saw it today.
Yeah, okay, so that's good. So it is a blockbuster. You've paid your money, you've...
I liked the first Thor quite a bit.
Yeah,
I really did.
Kenneth Branagh did a very good job as director. I'm not as familiar with the director now, and I don't even know his name off the top of my head. I've got it written down here somewhere, but he's a HBO. He was working on some shows in HBO. He did Sopranos and a few other things. And
oh, okay. I was not aware of that.
He's coming from Game of Thrones, so I'm sure he's a good director, and. But I did love Kenneth Branagh because he kind of injected that Shakespearean sense to the original.
It has a very much different feel than X-Men. It's completely, even though there is the overlap through S.H.I.E.L.D. and things. Not X-Men, but the S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Marvel Universe with Iron Man and all those things. There is a there's a different feel between this and, let's say, the Iron Man movies quite a bit.
Right.
Both Thor 1, the first Thor, and Thor. You know,
and again, that's to their credit because they're made by the same studio. It's all a comic book movie, but they are different characters, and they were able to do something that looked and felt and told a different story.
Both
than
family
Iron
friendly,
Man.
By the way. Both are still. That was the thing that I was impressed with. You could take your nieces and nephews to both either of these films, and you would not come away being disappointed. No language, no vulgarity, no gratuitous sex scenes. Just to toss one in there, it was actually. And actually, Thor is a gentleman throughout it.
Right.
Actually, which is kind of amazing.
Is. Yeah. Right. Well, that's his character, though. So
Well, but they did a good job at portraying
it. Yeah, I'm glad. Now, the movie that I liked a lot that I saw just this last week was Gravity. Now, this was not going to be a blockbuster. And I actually thought, oh my gosh, they're crazy having Alfonso Cuarón direct this movie with Sandra Bullock and George Clooney. He did Children of Men, one of the most heaviest movies I've ever seen. Not most heaviest, the heaviest movie I've ever seen, and absolutely one of the best science fiction movies ever made, Children of Men. This movie follows so well in those footsteps. Very well directed, absolutely astoundingly directed, actually. One of the best directed films I've ever seen.
And so, I'm guessing then from this build up here that you're recommending it
to see Gravity.
To see
right.
Gravity.
Unfortunately,
there.
We don't have much time to talk about it.
We don't have much time to talk about it, but that's a good one. I will have to take your recommendation under advisement. because of all the hype around it, sometimes I'm just a reflexively reactionary anti-hype.
Right. Yeah.
And once it took off for a bit, I sort of, but that's a very good recommendation there.
Yeah,
so this film about Gravity was actually kind of heavy, huh?
Ha, ha, ha. Very funny. Yeah, I get the joke. I got it this time.
Right.
Yeah, I'm following.
Okay,
but this actually is not that heavy of a movie. It's tense, but it's a very good, very well-done movie. And once again, the directing is some of the most creative I've ever seen. And really, it had to be to sell the story because there's only two characters in the whole film. So it's
Mark,
very well done.
We very much appreciate you being here this evening to go over these films. And this is the Bob Siegel Show. And thank you for joining us. And Bob Siegel will be back next week at the same time, same channel, KCBQ, 6 o'clock. Once again, this is Mike Friedenberg standing in for Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.